Hello and welcome, everyone. This is Dr. Rita Marie Moscalzo, and we're here for our Insulin Resistant Solution Practitioner Training Coaching Call. And I'm excited to be here because you guys always have such great questions, and I just love seeing and hearing how much you're learning and progressing and how many people you're able to help with all the stuff you already know, and there's still more to learn. So I'm really excited to be here. And I wanted to let you know that we just opened up the stress module, and Stacy sent an email out just a little bit before the call, maybe half an hour ago, and that let you know that she opened up the stress module, yes, and the fitness module. I've given her all she needs to open up the fitness module, but so she's working on that. She should be working on that, and that should be out soon. And then we have the stress module, and then the sleep module, then the timing module, and then the how to do a metabolic reset. So we've got a lot more to get to, yeah. And I know that there's a lot here to learn. And then in January, we will start the B4 Be Gone program. You guys should have already gotten the information for getting yourselves into the B4 Be Gone. There's not a whole lot of emails right now. There was just a welcome email, but you do have access to that site, and you've got access to the Getting Started, so you can get a sense of where I start with people when I'm taking them through a group program with blood sugar balancing. Of course, it's going to be a little bit different when you're working with somebody one-on-one, because it's just you can go according to their what they need, whereas in a group program, you just have to go according to a specific set and sequence. But you have access to that. If you don't have access to that, what I need you to do is send an email to helpdesk@drritamarie.com, helpdesk@drritamarie.com, and we'll make sure that you get tagged. We had a little bit of a confusion with the tagging system for, and that's the way we do it on the back end, but the tagging system, and some of the people that should have gotten tagged didn't, and some of the people that should not have gotten tagged did, and you were maybe getting duplicate emails and inviting you to join B4 Be Gone, and you're like, wow, wait a minute, I thought I was already in. So I apologize if you got extra emails. It's a complicated back end when we're using the system that we're using, and it's called Infusionsoft, and it's great. It's very flexible, but on the other hand, it's easy to make some mistakes. So we just started using these new things called campaigns, and it's beautiful and automated, and sometimes if you don't know what you're doing, you mess up. So we messed up, and you might have gotten duplicate emails, and you may not have gotten the tags that you should have gotten that allowed you access to B4 Be Gone. Now, the B4 Be Gone program is not on the same website as the Insulin Resistance Practitioner program. It used to be. We used to have everything on one site, but it just got to be too much, so we wanted to have a separate website for practitioners. However, you have the same exact login. Your user ID and password, unless you've changed it, are the same. Actually, it's only one field, so if you change it in one, it changes in the other. So know that. You always have the same password for the two systems. That way it makes it much easier for you to keep it straight. And then there's links between them, so you should be able to get back and forth between them, and you can access that information. Now, some of you have access to a free B4 Be Gone for your client, and that was something that we offered when you first registered. If you did not have that and you would like to take one of your clients through, again, send a message to... Best way would be so I see the message, because I want to see if there's enough people interested in that we could get a discount coupon put together so you guys could actually sign up a client at a discounted rate, because I want to make sure that because I want you to get the practice of taking somebody through a blood sugar balance, either with the group or on your own. So if that's something that you did not manage to get in, like I think it was the first five people or whatever got that, and the NEPT people also get to take a free person through. If you're interested in taking somebody through, write an email to nept@drritamarie.com, and that'll come to me. And if there's enough interest, we'll go ahead and we'll give you we'll put together a whole coupon thing, and you'll be able to take people through. The other thing is, if you were eligible, so the NEPT people and the folks who are the one of the first five will be sending you out a special, I think it's going to be a special coupon code that you use. So you'll have to get your client to register. They'll have to put in that field somewhere in there that they came from you. So we verify that. So you only get one, and then we'll get them in. And you will have to tell them that even though it's zero, the way the system's set up, they do have to put a credit card in. It's the only way. It won't be charged anything. It's zero, but they have to do that. That's just the way the system works. So if anybody feels uncomfortable with that, then you're going to have a conversation with Scott and see if you can work it out another way, because I don't think there is a way. But again, we're not going to charge them anything. We're just going to give them the zero. All right. So that's housekeeping stuff out of the way. And what I wanted to do is just get started to see where everybody's at. So I'd love to hear two shares, if we could, of just, like, where are you with the program right now? Just kind of a status, and how's it going? Is it coming at too rapid a pace? Is it a good pace? Is it too slow for you? Are you learning a lot? And would love to hear some of those things. So *2 on your telephone keypad, and you can share. And then if you're on the web, you can just type it in, and I'll just take the first couple that show up. The other thing I want to find out, I have these conversations with you guys, then I want to ask if you think it would be helpful to just do a quick tour through the new module that we just opened on stress, because I've already done that with the other modules, and just to give you an idea of what we have out there for you and how to use the materials. What you're going to notice is that there's a lot of done-for-you materials, meaning these are things that you can just grab and go with. You can take as-is and hand them out to your clients. That's not true of everything in the program. So, for example, you're not allowed to take the 250-page recipe guide and just hand it to your client. What you are allowed to do is to register as an affiliate by going to my website, drritamarie.com, clicking Join as an affiliate, and then you can actually give the person your affiliate code, and they can purchase those books if they're part of the program. So we'll give you that information. I'll get somebody to write that up and how to do that. But you're not allowed to just give it to your people. Okay, they have to buy it, and it's like $150 to get the books, and they come in a nice, beautiful package, and I think they can get it digitally for $97. I don't remember. Anyway. That's a good thing to do. And that's if they're not in the program, it's under 47. If they're in the program, they just have to pay the cost, which is $47. And you all can get them physical. If you didn't qualify to get it initially, you can get all the books for $47, which is just really our cost of doing it. We don't make money on that. So that's the deal. So if you guys, after I'll have you by a show of hands or by typing in on the web to let me know if you think it would be a good use of time to go through, and I do a screen share, and I have a screen share software that we can just get access into. And if you don't think it is, if you think you know enough to be able to get in there and find your way around, just fine. That's fine too. Either way, I want to supply you guys with what you need. So I'm going to open up Daniela.
Hi, thank you.
Hi, let me put you on mic so I don't have to do it on this. Never mind. I get my platforms confused. So everybody can hear you. I'm going to raise your volume just a little bit so I can hear you better.
So my name comes up now and not
it came up. It came up at, now it came up at Kaufman D, yeah. So this time I recognize it. Last time it was unidentified caller or something.
Okay. I just finally got my glucose tester today because I ordered it from Amazon, what you had posted.
Yes.
To go, and my stepmother was supposed to bring it, but she brought me somebody else's, thinking she was doing me a favor. So I finally came in the mail.
Oh.
She emailed it when she got back to New York. So it's a very long time. It's the first time I've done this. Are we allowed to reuse? And I mean, I saw in your video that you reused the, how do you call it? The
needle.
The needle.
The lancet.
How often can we reuse it like that?
Well, you always change it if you're allowing, like, your husband or somebody else in your family to use your lancet.
Sure.
You always clean it and then have a new needle. Okay. With yourself, technically, you change it every time you do it. Realistically, that's ridiculous. You know, I'm sitting here and every 15 minutes I'm testing it to see what the sugar is doing. Like, oh, my God. So realistically, you do it that way. And then beyond that, then however often you want to. Personally, you don't want to know how often, how infrequently I do it. I mean, I sometimes will go months, and I go, wait, this thing is not poking a hole in me. Oh, maybe the needle's too old, so I'll throw the needle away.
Oh, okay. And so do you use alcohol in between each time?
Technically, that's what you should do.
Yeah, I know, but I actually didn't. I did.
Do I? No.
Okay.
So I'm just kidding. This is what I do. I'm not going to tell you. The right thing to do is to change the needle.
It's not a legal thing.
Use alcohol. Okay.
It's not a legal thing. But from each, let's say, each other, for one day I wouldn't do it, and the next day I clean it out, or it's like even not even that necessary.
Totally.
Because I'm thinking like people sew and they prick themselves, and nothing is that, you know, nothing is disinfected before that. You don't know.
Oh,
when
I know. You don't disinfect your sewing needle. I mean, here you.
Yeah, or when you're cooking, you know, things happen.
If you're immune compromised, you know, if you have a tendency to get skin infections easily, if you're sensitive, it's certainly going to be important to do it more often.
Mm-hmm. Because the package came only with a few, and so I thought it cannot be something you need to change each time.
The package that you got with the unit came with 10, and it also came with 10 strips. So it came with the same number of strips as needles. So that's how they ship it. But then when you buy the replacement strips, they come 100. They don't come with any. You'd have to buy it. So when I first did this, I went and bought 100, about a box of 100 of the lancets for $7 or something. I bought the strips. I bought the unit.
Uh-huh.
And I still have so many lancets. It's ridiculous.
Right. I have to retry, but the first package of the 10 strips,
yes.
I always got an error on it. And error. And I didn't check immediately, like, what number it was, but the one of them was error 5, which is, like, it's too high, you know, whatever. I don't know. Maybe I was doing it wrong. But
you might have been, but also, let me just tell you one other thing. Check the box that the unit came with, because the first time I did it, I bought them at my local Walgreens, and the kits had already expired.
Yeah, I think I did check that. It was fine. I mean, the box of the strips, right?
Yes, strips.
Yeah, it was fine.
Okay.
It's not expired. I'll try it one more time, but whatever. It's not even necessary. It's only a few left.
But the thing about it is, though, Daniela, is that you have to make sure that sometimes it's time. I know that I screwed up the first few times, and I didn't realize you have to keep looking to make sure that the little droplet is flashing.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And then if you wait too long, if you put it in there, and then you wait and you do your pricking, and you don't look again, and you go to put the blood on it, sometimes it's missed. But if you got a whole box of them and you continue to get them, the errors.
Errors. So that's the problem is with that.
I switched.
I ended up switching, and then the other strips just worked. It was fine.
Oh, so they probably gave you, there was something wrong with those strips.
Yeah. And I ate an atypical meal for myself, and I guess by the time I was testing it was about 45 minutes. I ate terribly. I had rice and squash, little tahini over that, and green peas.
Mm-hmm.
And I rarely like eat rice like that.
Yeah.
I have more like vegetables and a protein.
Yeah.
And I had some honey.
So you did a really high carbohydrate meal just to test it.
I really did, and it went very high and freaked me out.
Oh, what did it go to?
181.
Mm. Okay.
It was like, look, this is not what I normally do. I haven't even had cravings for sugar like that. Could be I'll have my periods tomorrow. I don't know.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And then I tested again maybe it was 20 minutes later or 15 minutes later, and it was 140-something.
Wow, so it took a while to come down. So that was 45, so that was still under 2 hours. Where was it at 2 hours?
Well, this happened not long ago.
I'm
probably still coming down.
Keep testing it, see what it's at 2 hours, and then see how long it takes to come down, because that's another indication of how insulin resistant you really are.
to see how and see how low it will go, or
and
what?
See, well, yeah, I would see how low it goes, because if you might have a reactive hypoglycemic reaction. So I would also go out to 4 to 5 hours if you can.
You should
be with all that food.
I would
go out to 4 or 5 hours.
Keep checking up to that time.
And just keep checking every hour to just see if it goes down below. You know, if it goes down to 65, then you know you had a hypoglycemic reaction to it.
So somebody who wouldn't be hypoglycemic reactive, if they had honey, it wouldn't do that, you're saying? Something like little carbs. I mean, I had...
It was all carbs, yeah. A lot of carbs.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the thing is, there's two situations, right? There's the situation where it goes up real high. Well, there's multiple situations. It goes up real high, but it comes down really quickly. So at 2 hours, you're back pretty much to baseline. And that's it's a situation that needs to be addressed, but it's not as serious as the situation where at 2 hours, it's still high, and at 3 hours, it's still coming down, and it takes like 3 to 4 hours. And then an even worse situation, but then it stabilizes. And then in a worse situation is when it does that, and then it keeps going even further down, and then you go into hypoglycemia. So those are three stages of it. Like my situation was, it went really high, really fast, but it also came down, and by 2 hours I was back to normal. Mm-hmm. So I would have been missed by the medical system altogether.
Right.
In another situation, if it had gone up really high, but it was still at, you know, 110 at 2 hours, and, you know, 100 at 3 hours, and 90 at 4 hours, then that's a more advanced stage. And then if it had further gone, and at 5 hours it had gone down to 65, then that's even more of an advanced stage.
Okay. I ate a half an avocado.
That'll help slow it down. Wow. The other thing you can do when it goes up that high is chromium.
Yeah.
Take a couple of chromiums. That'll oftentimes bring it down. Exercise will also bring it down. Now, everybody's different, and you need to know what all the things are that you can counsel people how to do it. But so avocado is good. For some people, a quarter of an avocado, half an avocado goes right down. For other people, that doesn't work. Some people, chia. They just have a big bowl of chia gel and scarf it down, and that brings it down. For other people, exercise. Like I have one person who she would just go for a 10-minute walk, come right back down.
That's great. And but for the purposes of today, should I not do that? I mean, I already
I wouldn't. I wouldn't do anything to bring it down. I would just look to see what it is.
Yeah.
Just observe.
But I didn't have the half an avocado.
Oh, well, you might have skewed it a little bit, but let's see.
Yeah.
Wow, thank you for sharing that, because it's so telling, you know, that people need to hear that. And you need to experience
it. I was shocked. It was like, serves me right for having that back.
Well, it's and it also says that you were on the right track by eating the way you do.
Yeah.
That you intuitively know that those things aren't good for you, and that's going to reinforce you that next time you have an urge for rice and beans.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I don't think so.
The graphic.
Yes. Exactly. Good. Great. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have Dean.
No, that's going to reinforce you that next time you have an urge for rice and beans.
Hey, Dean. Yes.
Hi. How are you today?
Hi, I'm good. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks.
Awesome.
Well, I am doing my poking, and I'm really, really happy because I see that my numbers are going down. And before I was doing any type of rigorous thing, I went ahead and I did my lab work. So, and I received my results already. So from this glucose, the serum glucose, the last time that I did, it was 116, and now went down to 101.
Better.
So that's better. The only thing that, there's a couple of things in here that kind of worried me a little bit. and it was the BUN and the creatinine ratio. I haven't seen that in the other lab results before, and this time it came like 26, and the range is 9 to 23, and they say that's high.
Okay, so what is the BUN and the creatinine? Ratios are nice, but sometimes you have to actually look at it to see which, like if one's normal and the other one's too low, or if one is high and one's low, sometimes the ratios can be misleading. So what's the BUN?
The BUN was 20.
Okay, that's a little high, yeah.
And then the creatinine, it was 0.78.
Well, that's normal. That's in a good range.
Yeah.
Yeah, so your BUN is high. Your creatinine's okay. BUN gets affected. Sometimes malabsorption can make the BUN go up high. I always call it BUN, so I'm going to just call it BUN. The BUN goes up too high or it goes down too low in states of hypochlorhydria or malabsorption. It could also be a little sluggishness or strain on your kidneys.
Oh,
okay. It's not in the, like, alarm state. It's nothing to be alarmed about. It's not
because both of them, when they do it separately, they do fall in the normal range because the BUN is 6 to 24, although at 20, I think that it's a little bit high.
I think it's a little bit high, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I would be looking at malabsorption as a possibility, and also, you know, make sure that you're flushing, that you have enough liquid, the fluid, to keep your kidneys working. Was the GFR okay?
EGFR? Oh, yes. The Gia does really, really, really good, and it has also helped me to control the numbers. The numbers. It has been really, really nice. I used to drink like 1 tablespoon and 8 ounces of water before I use for my walking, and it's amazing because it keeps me really like not having cravings when I come back, that I prepare my breakfast. So it holds really good, and that's very, very good.
Great.
So it has helped me, and I have noticed a big difference when I take it before a meal or something like that, and then eat and then read my numbers. It's really, really good. The other one, because I have lost weight a lot, it was I guess that the body's trying to adjust it, and with the changes that I have done, it's kind of using like the fat storage and stuff like that, so it's kind of... I ended up losing more than what I would like to. So my cholesterol came 219.
219? Is that,
yes,
that's down from where it was?
That, well, no, before it was below 200. I can't remember what was the number, but it was below 200. And what was the other one? The LDL also came high, 141.
Yeah. What about your HDL cholesterol ratio? HDL triglyceride ratio.
That was 3.5.
So, yeah, you've got some insulin resistance that's been going on for a while. So how high were your triglycerides?
So my triglycerides were 73, and my HDL, the last time was like 52, and it went up to 63.
Oh, okay, that's not 3.5. That's a different ratio. That's fine. The ratio they don't calculate, that you have to calculate yourself, that's an indicator for insulin resistance, is triglycerides to HDL.
Oh, okay. So
okay, and yours got better. So it went from 73 to 50 or whatever. So 73 to 62 is almost 1-to-1. It's just a little bit on the high. It's fine. So that's good. You really get concerned when you have somebody who has like 150 triglycerides and a 50 HDL. That's a 3-to-1 ratio. That's not a good ratio.
Yeah.
And that's a really suggestive of insulin resistance and probably long-standing. You want them to be as close to equal as possible.
Okay. Okay. And then my hemoglobin A1C, the last time was 6.2, and this time came 6.3, so I couldn't understand that too much. I said, well, my numbers are getting lower, and I had the serum glucose lower, so I don't know in there.
When was the last time you had your blood tested? Hemoglobin A1C tested.
Yeah, because that's something that I keep track on that. And the last time that I did was on July 2013.
Okay, so it was a long time ago. So we don't know what it was 3 months ago. So it might have... It might not be... You know, what could have happened is that you had a worsening, and then now you've gotten better. So if you didn't have it 3 months ago, it's really hard. It's like comparing apples to oranges. It's really hard to compare because you've been doing this for a while, but maybe you got worse before you got better. So I would just say this is your new baseline.
My numbers with it, because I have been keeping track of my poking. I used to have like, it was very, very scattered numbers. They were days that were good, and they were days that it was like 146 and 156. That was driving me nuts. But now it's in the hundreds, 92, 93, 95. So
back and test the hemoglobin A1C in 3 months.
In 3 months, yeah. And then I did the insulin too, and that came into 4.7.
That's the fasting insulin, 4.7.
That's
reasonable. I like to see it around 3. So it's a little bit higher than I like to see it. But the thing that's most telling, though, is when you do a postprandial, and that means, you know, within 45 minutes to an hour after eating, to see what's going on. I was reading an article just the other day, and he was talking about this woman who had all the signs, you know, of insulin resistance, but her blood sugars were staying, like, they were always normal. They were always great. And he was confused. It was confounding. So he sent her for the glucose, the insulin, the fasting insulin, and then the postprandial. Her insulins were going up to 90. And her blood sugars were staying perfect. And what his interpretation was, she had the best pancreas, the most reserves in that pancreas, because it's like no matter how much sugar she kept putting in, that pancreas could deal with it, because she was eating, that was his concern, she was eating so much sugar. But it was 90. So it was saying that, she had this insulin resistance issue, and her pancreas could just make more. And it would keep it normal. So there's a lot of little factors. So when we start to work with people and we're a little confused, it's like, wait a minute, there's other things you can look at. And looking at the insulin. So I'll give you an example. I just had a client of mine. I was working with her, and she was keeping her blood sugars really steady. When I started working with her, they weren't. We got her, changed her diet a bit, and really nice and steady. And then after she had cataract surgery, she couldn't get them down again. They were up in the 100 teens to 109, you know, that kind of thing, fasting, where she had gotten them down to low 80s. And so, you know, we thought, well, maybe it's the stress of that, you know, upped some of her nutrients and stuff. She got it back under control, and then it starts happening again where it's going up, and she's not understanding. You know, she had added a couple of pieces of fruit back in. I said, it's probably that. It still wasn't coming down. So let's see what your insulin's doing. Let's see if you're very insulin resistant, or maybe your pancreas isn't keeping up with the load.
Yeah.
So she did her fasting insulin, and it was below 1, which is low. But I'm not worried about the fasting insulin being low. I want to see what's happening after she ate. She 45 minutes after eating, and it was 1.1. It was her pancreas isn't keeping up with that load. Her pancreas is starting to go. And she's in her 80s. So, you know, so she had a lot of years of it where it wasn't controlled. But that's the thing. Now, the other thing, and I'll throw this in here, which we didn't talk about it very much we did talked about it in the assessments piece, but this brings it to light. So I'm saying, okay, what's happening there? Is it that her pancreas is fatigued and isn't producing anymore, or she got antibodies that are attacking it? And I would treat it in a different way. So the next set of tests we're having her run are anti-insulin antibodies, anti-islet cell antibodies, GAD, glutamic acid decarboxylase, and then C-peptide. Those are the four tests that you do for autoimmune. And we have those listed in your assessments thing. Now, it's
okay.
Not the most common thing that you're going to see with people, but you really have to look at it. Like, you look at her, and she doesn't look like she's would be diabetic because she's thin. And I've had other people, which I've worked with, they don't look like they're a type 2 diabetic. And I've had this situation come up one other time with a guy who was told he was type 2 diabetic, but he wasn't able to keep his stuff under control. Turned out it's autoimmune. And you work at it very differently, right? You go, oh, it's an autoimmune condition. Now we have to work out what do we do to get those antibodies under control, get the inflammation under control.
Yeah.
Okay? So you still have to do the blood sugar management, but you also have to work on the autoimmune.
Yeah. So the prandial, keep measuring up to it get 45 minutes after I eat?
Yeah, you could do 45 minutes to an hour. Because that's when the insulin usually will peak. It usually peaks right around the same time or maybe a little bit later than when the sugar peaks. So 45 minutes would be reasonable.
Okay.
But you have to go back to the lab to do it. It's like you can't do the insulin at home, unfortunately. I wish you could.
Yeah. No, but that's fine. I'll do it. And thank you so much for that website that you put. I did a search. Because I don't have a health insurance now, and I did a search, and it was amazing and outrageously the huge amount of money that I was wanting, the comprehensive panel and the blood cells panel, and then the A1C and the insulin, and with the website that you gave us for LabScorp, it was awesome. I say, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, thanks a lot because it did work. And she was very, very useful tool, like guiding. I was wanting something. I said, well, you can have this, and it's a package, and it saves you money and this and that. So,
oh, good.
It was really, really, it did work really good. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're so welcome. All right. Well, thank you. So I'm going to put your hand down now. And
okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks.
Okay, so what I want to do is find out, I'm going to look to the web too, and I'll take answers to questions there, but I want to know if anybody would find it useful to take a look at the site and just kind of see what I've put up there for stress, and I could just explain to you what's up there in your stress module. Otherwise, I could just talk about it. So if you think it would be useful to show it, raise your hand, *2. And if you think that it would be just fine to hear about it, then don't raise your hand. And then I'm going to go to the web, and you can say the same thing. You could either say it would be or wouldn't be. Let's see who's on the web. Okay, so a couple of questions coming in. Yeah, so Ajnira said, if you're working with a client at a distance, do we need to require them to get their own meters and the supplies to begin to routinely test themselves? It's a good idea to have them being testing themselves. I mean, you can certainly buy a bunch of kits and sell it to them and send it to them if you want to. It just depends on how you want to approach your business model. But I would say for sure, some people are adverse to it, and they won't do it at the beginning, and sometimes they just need a little coaxing. So the require, I just hesitate to use the word require just because you still want to be able to help them. And if they won't get their own meters and tests, then you explain to them, look, I can work with you if you don't, but here's the deal. when we come to creating the diet for you, we have to go with the strictest diet possible. We're going to eliminate all fruits and all grains and everything that can possibly raise your blood glucose. I don't know why my mouth was tripping over the words. So anything that could raise it. So they have to be on a much stricter diet. Whereas if they're testing, you know, they can test and say, oh, yeah, I can include the blueberries. Oh, yeah, I can include quinoa, you know, during the metabolic reset. But if they're not testing, you can't have them include those. Now, the example that I just gave you that I was sharing that I read about in an article that one of the doctors was writing, he said basically that, you know, in some cases, just testing the glucose isn't enough. Like, he was watching this person eat all this sugar, and he couldn't understand how she could get away with it and have her blood glucose be where it was, and her insulins were higher. So you can't, you know, it's really good to be testing, and it's also good to have them avoid all the things we know that can raise the glucose, even if it doesn't cause the glucose to go up. So say you test and you say, pineapple doesn't raise my sugar, but brown rice does. I'm going to eat pineapple during the reset. Maybe it's a good idea to just stay away from all the things that are considered high glycemic. That's what I would say. Florence has a question about a probiotic. I'm going to skip that one for right now because I want to just go through the other questions that are specifically related. Okay, and then I'll come back to your question, Florence. Because Maria asks about, what are the thoughts on resistant starches, i.e. cooked and cooled white rice, boiled and cooled white potatoes, dehydrated green plantains, et cetera. In theory, those foods do not impact blood sugar and are broken down in the colon. In theory, but the studies all show that the potatoes, now I don't know about cooled versus white, and what they've used in the things where they measured the glucose, the glycemic index, but potatoes seem to raise it dramatically. White rice is like pure sugar. It's like there's no reason to eat white rice. There's no nutritional value to it. So I'm not a fan of it. Plantains could be good because they're starchy, but I don't know. I don't know that you can say that they don't impact blood sugar. I'd have to see testing it. I'm not sure. I don't know enough about the whole theory of the resistant starches, and it doesn't really sit well with me. Barbara Nellen, I did the C-peptide, normal beta cell antibodies, normal insulin antibodies. 0.4, normal is less than 0.4. Are insulin antibodies significant? Okay, so C-peptide normal, beta cells abnormal. I'm have a hard time reading what you're saying. So this insulin, okay, it looks like the insulin antibodies are right at the border, like at a 0.4, and it's supposed to be less than 0.4. Fasting blood sugar is 220, insulin is 70. Ooh, yeah, you got a problem here. A1C is 9. All labs were pre-green cleanse week. Since these labs have been taken, the Geneema, olive leaf, berberine, chromium, DHA, and some two-hour postprandial sugars have been under 100. Yay! Oh, that's good. So, yeah, there are some antibodies there going on, but I'm not sure what you mean by, you said the C-peptide normal, beta cell abnormal, insulin abnormal, 0.4. So that means that you had both beta cell and insulin antibodies. So these are significant because your body's attacking your pancreas, and then once it creates the insulin, it's attacking it. That's why your insulin's so high. It just keeps trying to make more. And it's not effective, right? An insulin of 70, your blood sugar should be at like zero. That's way too much insulin, but you're very insulin resistant. Now, the good news about this, Barbara, is that even though you've got beta cell antibodies, your pancreas is still working well. It's producing enough insulin. It's the insulin resistance that's causing the blood sugar to go up. So that's actually a good thing. Okay, but what you need to do is get the diet completely under control, be super, ultra, uber strict. Don't allow it, don't take anything that allows it to go above 110 now that you've gotten it down to 2 hours after being 100. Awesome. But you need to work on your immune system. So what does that mean? Well, there's a lot of things you need to do. Leaky gut is very important to get under control for an autoimmune condition. Looking at heavy metals, important thing. Making sure that your nutrient levels are good. Making sure that you have enough of your B vitamins, your vitamin C. You making sure that you have enough glutathione. A good supplement might be some topical glutathione, like Apex Energetics makes something called OxyCell, which is topical antioxidants, awesome for autoimmune conditions. You can look at liposomal glutathione. There are some combination formulas that work well. That OxyCell works well. There's a thing called Protandem that has some things that are supposedly bring up the glutathione. I've never actually done the pre- and post-test to see. But things that support your liver, like milk thistle. But your gut healing is super important as well. So this is great because if you're doing the green cleanse, then this is going to help. And I would do your numbers again in maybe a month. Like, be really strict and go back and do them again a month after being really strict. So, yeah, I think it is significant. Point four, it's still bullets, right? I always tell people, do you want no bullets shooting at your house, or do you want, like, a couple of bullets here and there is no big deal? You want none, right? You want it zero. So yours is right on the border, but still it's something that needs to be addressed if you want to get this under control. Actually, since hemoglobin A1C will take about 3 months, I would say you can wait 3 months to get that done, and the antibodies won't. But you might want to do the whole thing again in 3 months, not 1 month. Heidi says, would you explain further in terms of numbers what severe insulin resistance looks like versus mild or low? I just want to have a flavor for what the various number patterns might mean. What I was describing earlier was not specific numbers per se, but it was pattern per se. So let me explain those patterns, and then I can go into what numbers might be problematic. But the numbers are a little bit off. Because you know, you can have an insulin super high, you can have your insulin so high that it keeps the blood sugar low, but it's also causing all the damage from the insulin. So what I explained before is what happened was, say you eat something, and at 2 hours, your blood sugar goes up, and it's 180. And then, I mean, that's 2 hours, 45 minutes, it's 180. And then you watch it, and it starts to come down, but by 2 hours, it's still at 140. Then, you know, at 3 hours, it's, you know, at 120. And it's slowly going down such that it's still not back to normal at even 3 hours or 4 hours. But then it drops below where it started. Then that's really severe because you're having not only the resistance and it's taking a really long time, but then you're going beyond. You're having so much insulin that it shoots beyond. That's severe. On the other end of the spectrum would be at 45 minutes, it's 180. But then at 2 hours, it's back down in the 90s or 80s. That's good. That's the better kite. That's just mild. But then the middle would be where it goes up to 180 at the 45 minutes. And then, you know, maybe at 2 hours, it's still higher. It's maybe 130, 140, and then it keeps going down, and at basically, you know, 4 hours maybe later, it's back down to normal. Okay, so that would be the middle group. So that's basically that. And numbers, you know, sometimes it could be just going up to 140 versus 180, but still be severe if it stays up longer and then drops down below. So it's not necessarily how high it peaks, but it's the behavior it does at the other places that would talk about that. So Ajnira wants to know, are the four tests I mentioned specific for insulin resistance, or can they interpret an autoimmune response generally? Well, yes and no, generally, because autoimmune diseases don't exist in isolation usually. It's usually a pattern in the body of disruption that causes the body to affect multiple areas. And usually it's wherever you are prone as a result of either genetics or early exposure that you have specific weak areas. So certainly the islet cells, that's very specific to autoimmune and insulin resistance type autoimmune. Certainly the beta cells, because it's part of the pancreas, that would be specific to blood sugar imbalance. The C-peptide is specific. The glutamic acid decarboxylase, that could be, if it's just in isolation without the others, it could be interpreted as something else, because that's not an antibody that you're measuring, but not a general immune response. It's oftentimes associated with neurotransmitter things and problems with GABA, and there could be a genetic problem with that. Okay. All right, I'm going to go back to Florence's question, which is interesting. I've been using a probiotic at night, Glutenza, Dr. Tom's new eating protein capsule. When I take one capsule, I can't sleep more than 6 hours with this probiotic. Normal sleep is 7. Can you help with what might be happening? So my understanding was that Glutenza was more of an enzyme supplement, not a probiotic supplement. Maybe it has probiotics in it. I haven't looked at the ingredients recently to know that. I have seen that sometimes when people take probiotics at night, then they sleep less than when they, because they can't sleep, they wake up. And a lot of that can be that there's a lot of activity going on in their gut as a result of trying to restore balance. Other than that, I don't really know. I don't know enough about that. I just thought that product was helping you to break down gluten. And it was to be used for accidental gluten exposure, only in tiny amounts, though. Sequoia says Glutenza does have probiotics as well. Maria said, for those who love white rice and white potatoes, testing the theory of resistant starches. Eat cooked and cooled white rice, boiled and cooled white potatoes, dehydrated green plantains and green bananas, compared to warm baked, et cetera, not cooked. Google resistant starch to learn more about it. Okay? All right. Pace is great, learning a lot and beginning to review modules for a second time. Great. Oh. So you can only access modules 1 to 3, but not emailed, not before. Now, what you have to do, this you have to make sure you do, is log out completely and then log back in. What point is the level considered low? Are you considering blood glucose, Sequoia, or are you wondering about insulin? Because we were talking about both. Tony says that the stress module is very straightforward and comprehensive, doesn't think it would be really useful to go over it. Sequoia said it's useful to go over the stress because sometimes you point things out that we haven't seen. Oh, okay. We could do a quickie. Not spend too much time on it. Let me see. Sequoia, which question, which level are you talking about? Because if you're talking about glucose, okay. If you're talking about glucose, then what happens is that if you're talking about reactive hypoglycemia, so say your normal fasting glucose is in the 80s, and you eat a meal, and then it goes down to 78. Is that too low? Probably not, you know, especially if you're taking chromium and you're doing things. But if your glucose goes down to like 60 after you eat a meal, that's more likely to be a reactive hypoglycemia. If your fasting glucose is in the 70s or the 60s even and you feel great, there's no problem with mental clarity, you feel really good, then I would say that that's not too low. Certainly going down in the 50s and 40s are questionable, and I would have said ages ago that that was problematic, except that, you know, I'm doing a green cleanse right now, and I'm not drinking all that much, so maybe a quart of green juice or green smoothie a day, and my blood sugar, my fasting blood sugars have been anywhere from, like, I think this morning it was like 49, but my blood sugars even in between have been not going much out of the 70s. So I've been maintaining my blood glucose between, say, 50 and 70. And I will tell you, I feel awesome that way. I just have such mental clarity. There's no food cravings. It feels really good. So, you know, it's really relative to how people are. And one of the things that even the textbooks will say is that if the blood glucose goes low, but people are not symptomatic, like lightheaded and irritable and cranky, that's fine. And even if you look at ketogenic diets for therapeutic use, and I don't think ketogenic diets are necessarily good for long term, but they're great for therapeutic use, they're recommending keeping it between 45 and 70. So, yeah, hard to tell. You really have to go by everything in this situation, like the relative and how the person's feeling. So that's that. Let's see if we have any more over here, and then I'll go back to the phone. And then if anybody wants, we'll do that at the end with the going over the stress thing. So that way we can get all the questions answered. And then anybody that wants to stay and for that, they can stay. And Tony, you could go have another thing to do. Okay, so we could do that. Let me just do a refresh. Yeah, so I have had that situation, Florence, of people taking probiotics at night and not being able to sleep as well. And it may be that there's just a lot of activity going on in your gut. No more. Okay, good. Okay, we have questions, lines open. So let me open up some lines. Okay, Kelowna, B.C. Now I should remember who that is because is that Ginger? No. Who's in Kelowna, B.C.?
Jackie.
Okay, now I remember. Okay, I can't keep straight. I got to remember these weird interpretations that Instant Teleseminar does. Okay, got it. Go for it. What's your question or comment? Or is that just a question about it's? Oh, that's right. The last thing I did was ask about the would it be helpful? Okay, so is that what you were responding to?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I'm going to put everybody's hands down. You're welcome. I'm going to put everybody's hands down. Now, anybody that has a question or a comment, raise your hand. Okay, there we go. Tony.
Hello, Dr. Rita Marie.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. I have a comment and also a question. I'll ask the question first. So, of course, my husband is my client for this training, and we've determined by adding some sugar back in that we've been able to keep his glucose below 100, even without exercising and all that. But it's clear in the morning that cortisol is the problem. If I were to give him chromium before he went to bed, would that stabilize his blood sugar at all?
It oftentimes does.
Okay.
So you can give it to him at night. The other thing to do is have him do a bit of burst training about an hour or two before he goes to bed, just like two minutes. And that oftentimes brings it down.
All right. Well, for him, we're going to have to do something modified. He's having surgery on a bad knee on Tuesday. I would have to do something modified with his arms above his head and where he wouldn't use his lower body.
Well, you know, he could sit in the chair and have some weights so he doesn't affect his knee and to have some weights and just do really rapid up and down with his arms.
Okay, great. Thank you. That's very helpful. I did what you said. I became a detective and just decided to add things in and test and all that. I also figured out that his blood pressure is going up and down based on pain and the ability to manage the pain. The knee, because when his and I can tell in the morning just looking at his eyes that he had a good night or that the knee is not bothering him, and the blood pressure goes in accordance with that.
Okay, so there you go.
Yeah.
That makes total sense. Pain will definitely, pain and stress will bring it
pain
up.
Pain and inflammation, So thank you for that. That will help me with some other people. Also want to thank you so much for the Done For You assessments. I'm just in love with them. They're just amazing, very comprehensive. I think that with clients who may be resistant to addressing other areas other than food, that those assessments are going to tell the story, and it'll make it a little easier for me to help people.
Yeah.
And the stress one as well.
Good.
Especially in the stress one. I looked at that today, too. I thought it was really great. And I wanted to share some information. I can't remember who said that she'd taken probiotics and wasn't able to sleep.
Oh, yeah.
I had an experience prior to the cleanse that I'm on now where I did some cultured foods, and there was a war going on in my gut all night long. The good guys and the bad guys. And I had problems sleeping, but my good guys won.
Yay!
So I know now not to do that. I'd prefer to do that midday as opposed to an evening when, you know, the gut war might start a little earlier than I'd like it to start. So I want to share that, too.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's been my experience with people is that when we give them, and not everybody, when we give them probiotics at night, it was like, whoa, I can't sleep. And that's what my assumption was, too, the gut war. I like the way you put it, the gut war.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's it for me right now. Thank you very much.
You're so welcome. Thank you, Tony.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. So we have Daniela. Hi, Daniela.
Yes. Hi. Hello again. So a couple of questions. One, I will go just tell you where the numbers are now. So when I spoke with you, it was 144 at 345.
Yeah.
Whatever, you're 245.
I'm 345.
Yeah. But I'm an hour ahead of you. At 426, it was already 95. And at 445, it was at 93.
Okay. And where did it start and what time did you start?
I think I ate that crazy meal around 2:33, and around 3:30 it was at 181.
Okay.
At 3:45 it was at 144.
3:30. So 181.
So about 2 hours after I started eating, it was back down to 95.
At 2 hours after you stopped eating.
After I started sort of eating that crazy meal.
Yes. So it was at 90 something, 95.
95, and 95. Then 20 minutes later at 93.
So it's like now, yeah, okay. And what time is it by you now?
5. So 15 minutes ago it was at 93.
So 15 minutes is 93. So you started out, it was at 1:30 when you ate the meal.
Your time?
Okay, you're
my
giving
time.
Me in both. Okay, yeah. Okay.
No, my time, 2:30, around 2:30, 3 o'clock, I ate all that craziness.
Okay.
Well, it's not so crazy in people's standards, but not here on this call.
Okay, so at 4 o'clock, which is now, it's at 93.
Yeah, for me, it's 5 o'clock now. So
yeah.
That means
okay,
two and a half hours later, it's at 93.
And do you know where it started when you first, before you ate?
No, because I was eating and my husband brought a package in.
Okay.
Package and started figuring out how to do this and testing it.
Okay. So we don't know if you're at your fasting where you started or you're still a little high. So monitor it.
Right.
Monitor
I will keep
the next
checking.
Couple hours.
I will keep
checking.
Yeah.
And just see. And report back to us and let us know. And just a really good thing for everybody to know, make sure people test right before the meal. Because here's the deal. They may wake up in the morning and they go out and they do this and they do that and they don't test. And then they eat their breakfast later. And they may have exercised in the meantime. They may have gone up and down the stairs just to, you know, get their kid out of bed. They may have taken their supplements, and something in their supplements could set them off because a lot of those supplements have rice flour and other things in them. So I would just make sure that you always tell them just right before you start eating, you take it. You see what it is before the meal so you can see what the difference is. So it's just a trick that, you know, it's easy to not do it and try to save them a poke, but it's not worth saving them the poke.
Mm-hmm. And for example, I myself drink lemon water in the morning and then have some wheatgrass juice. Should I be checking what the effects of that are?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the lemon water is probably not going to do anything, but the wheatgrass juice, you never know. I've tested myself on green juice. I made a broccoli. First time I tried this, it was I think it was just broccoli, cabbage, and kale or something, celery, some simple juice, and I just drank it like I normally would drink, which is really fast. you know, 15 minutes later, I downed a whole quart of it. My blood sugar got up to 145.
Oh, really?
On green juice. Okay?
Wow.
So you have to learn, like, if you're really super sensitive, that you either have to find the pace at which you can drink it so that it just is a slow drip feed, or adding a little chia. Like, if I go to a restaurant or something, I'll sometimes ask them to put chia seed in the juice.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to testing after I drink a protein shake where I put all kinds of good things in, like flaxseed and chia and so on.
Yeah.
Because I find that I still feel shaky. It feels like I need to eat more. And I may have a half an avocado in there or coconut oil to try to give it some fats. I still feel a bit shaky from it. I feel like I would like to still eat something else.
Yeah, well, then measure and see.
Yeah.
And then once you measure and see, and when you find out things that, if it goes up a little higher than you thought, try it with chromium.
Mm-hmm.
And see if that makes a difference.
Okay, great. So my new question here is, talking about the microbiome, could that affect insulin resistance?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There's a really good book. I interviewed this guy, Mike Mutzel, a couple of weeks, probably a month ago, on my radio show, and he wrote a book called The Belly Fat Phenomenon or something like that. It's on my web. Just go to dremeryradio.com and then do a search for belly fat. And his thing will come up. And he was really fascinating. And he talked about how important that people are overlooking the state of the gut, the microbiome in the gut, the hormonal distribution, the way that the hormones are acting in the gut, and how it affects blood sugar. Fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Because the fact that I went up to 181 with a meal like that, where I had maybe 2 tablespoons of honey,
mm-hmm.
and the other carbs. That's way too high. Like,
oh God, that's way too high. That's why, you know, and this is what, if you look at the insulin resistant, the blood sugar, what do they call that? The test where you do it in the office. I'm drawing a blank on the name of it.
The
glucose tolerance test. When you go to the office and they give you glucose syrup, and then they measure you over the next 5 hours. And on the low end of that scale, the people who are normal, their blood sugar doesn't go above 110. 100.
Yeah, so this is crazy.
On
this
pure
is,
sugar.
Really,
I mean, what you just described was by standard American diet, that was an excellent meal. There's nothing wrong with that meal.
Yeah.
That was like way better than what most people eat.
Yeah.
Right? So your body is very sensitive.
But I wonder, talking about the microbiome, about maybe it's been 5 weeks ago that I started making water kefir. And I stopped drinking in the last few days because I'm suspecting something. I started getting addicted to it. I'm wondering, because I started getting quite bloated recently, and I'm wondering if I've been feeding something that's actually not good. Because I know I didn't have a candida yeast overgrowth I had it a long time ago when I had babies.
Yeah.
But so I haven't had these problems, and just wondered if I just caused something, and then perhaps that has made this insulin thing, or this whatever, my number to go up so high, the sugar.
Hard to know. I mean, so you started drinking the water kefir, and then the problem started shortly after or right after you started it?
I think I'm more bloated. At first, it's been going through stages. Like, it's introducing new critters, and like the other lady said, there's like gut wars going on.
There's gut wars going on.
Yeah. So at some point I felt that it was actually nice. First it was a little bit worse, and I thought it was nice. And then recently I would get quite bloated. So I was wondering if that's what it was. Now I stopped drinking it last couple of days. And I think the bloating is much better today. So it could be that. I'm just wondering.
It could be, you know, when you make the water kefir, you have to make sure you let it go long enough for them to eat all the sugar that you put in the water.
Yeah, a couple of days.
And
I think in the beginning I didn't do that.
Maybe you didn't do that, and you created an overgrowth
from
drinking, eating sugar.
Right. In the beginning, I think I only did one day, and then I started doing 2 days.
Yeah, and it may, maybe for you has to go longer. There's this little unit you can get. I think I ordered one from Apex Energetics. They use it in measuring, like, the sweetness of wine, and you can actually measure the sweetness, and you can actually test the fluid to see what the level is. And
from
really
Apex Energetics?
Yeah, I bought it. I think I bought it through there. I'd have to look to see what the name of it is. I'll pull it out, and I'll let you guys know next time. But it's like, it wasn't that expensive. It was probably $20. And I was using it to do urine testing. They teach a process of urine testing where you test the specific, you know, sugar contents and stuff. Anyway, I'll look for that. That could be cool to test it if you're making any kind of kefirs or kombuchas or anything like that, to make sure that they've eaten all the sugar.
Yeah.
And you can usually tell by how sweet it is.
Yes, that's why I thought, oh, it's tasting a lot more sour now, but
mm-hmm.
it would be good to be able to test that.
That's
for sure.
Yeah. I don't really know the name of the unit. You may be able to find it if you go to Apex's site and just look up equipment that they have, testing
mm-hmm.
equipment. Okay,
I'm checking. All right.
So Sequoia says, I wonder how to work out how I would know for me what the level of glucose is. It's like I would just keep monitoring and charting and just writing down how you're feeling. Don't try to analyze it at the beginning. Just write down, like, you know, the chart that I gave you guys. It's just got all this great stuff in it. Just write down everything on the chart and then go back and look and say, whenever my blood sugar goes below X, that's when I start to feel grumpy and irritable or starving or whatever. Whenever it goes above this, then that's when I feel good. And that will be how you determine it for you. Okay, so that was Daniela, and now we have Maura Collins. Hello, Maura. Is your phone on mute? From Escondido, California. Maybe that's not your name. If you raised your hand and you haven't spoken yet, go ahead and speak, because you're the only one with the hand raised right now.
Can you hear me?
I can.
It's Sequoia.
Oh, Sequoia. Kosev is Maura Collins.
Oh,
from,
well,
Escondido, California.
I'm not, but it's Sequoia.
That's so bizarre.
That's what happens through Gmail.
Okay, you may take on false identities.
So I'm a little confused, so that's why I wanted to get on the phone. So yesterday, I suspected anyway that a grapefruit would make a difference. So it was 78 before I ate it. It was 124 just immediately after. 15 minutes later, it's 118. Then it 30 minutes later, it's 89, and then it was 84 at 45 minutes. Now, so that would be a good response, right?
Yeah, it went up a little higher than I would have liked it, but it didn't last there very long. It came right down, and that could have been just immediate fluctuation. So,
So from that, I thought, well, grapefruit's probably not the best thing for me to have, but if I had that with green juice, would that help?
Probably would help, or if you had it with lettuce, like, you know, put grapefruit slices on a bowl of lettuce.
Okay.
It would help, right, too. Yeah, the fiber would slow it down.
So I'm testing out things that I'm suspecting, right? So so today I had some beets, shredded beets, raw, and after 15 minutes it went up to 100, and at 30 minutes it was 108. Now, if it keeps creeping up, but then it's down after an hour, is it's okay? Or
I think if it's creeping up and it goes up above 110, I would keep it out for the metabolic reset, because it's definitely creating too much of a blood sugar spike and an insulin response. Whereas if it, like the other one, you said it went up it very quickly. Like at 15
mm-hmm.
minutes or something, but then
yes.
it was down by 45 minutes.
Yes.
Then that might be just a spurious. Sometimes when I take it and it's up quickly, I'll take it again immediately. I'll go, huh? Why would it be that high that quickly? I'll take it immediately and it's down. And I just suspect that you know, it has to go up in order to stimulate the pancreas to produce the insulin, and then it comes down. And usually it's pretty instantaneous, but we could just happen to catch it when it's done that up. So if I test it and it's high and I go, huh, that's weird, and I test it immediately again and it's down, I've tested a third time, and if it's still down, then I don't worry about it.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to decide, okay, and with other people, what is the level below you don't want it to drop to? And then you mentioned that, you know, look for symptoms. But what happens if, say, it goes down to 65?
Yeah, if it started out in the 80s, so that's why it's important to measure right before the meal. So you measure right before, and if it goes down within an hour or two or three or four even, it goes down to significantly below, like 10 or more points below where it started, it's a possibility that it wasn't a good response.
Okay, so you're always comparing it to what it was before the meal?
Yeah.
Or would you compare that to what it was, let's say, first thing in the morning?
Not necessarily the first thing in the morning, because there's certain things that can confound the first thing in the morning. You know, a troubled night of sleep with cortisol going up. Even during the night, if there's some liver congestion and the glucagon is coming in to try to keep the blood sugar steady during the night, but if there's some liver congestion, it may overshoot its mark and it may end up getting more sugar released. So that can be a problem. And that's why some people have the blood sugars high in the morning. Not so much as a cortisol response. It's just the normal glucagon, insulin. They go back and forth to keep it nice and steady. And there's this little range that they try to keep it in. And if it goes beyond or it goes below, then we're looking at some other issues.
So I'm just trying to understand this. So
sure.
What I'm hearing is that if your blood sugar goes up, but it comes down fairly rapidly into the normal range, or rather what it was before the food, then that's okay. But if it takes a long time, or if it dips too low, too far below what it was before you took the food, then that's a problem.
Yeah, and then let me clarify on that. If it goes high, like at 45 minutes, where it's just peaking, it's about, mm-hmm. you know, above 110. It doesn't matter, you know, if it's 120, if it's 130, if it's 140, even if it's back down to baseline at 2 hours, it's still a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because every time it goes above that 120, you're getting damage to the peripheral nerves.
Right.
Right, so that's not good. Right. It's a better situation than if it stays elevated, certainly. It's a less advanced situation. But those are the things you really want to help people to catch, because those are contributing to the bigger waistlines, to their brain fog, to their fatigue, to their clogged arteries, hypertension, without them even knowing it. So you want to catch them early on and just eliminate those foods that elevate it that way.
Okay, and you also said, were saying that for the purposes of reset, that you wanted to keep it below 110.
Mm-hmm.
So if, because I had the client in yesterday and hers was, you know, it stayed above 110 the entire time when we were testing it with food. It only went up to 120, I think it was 128, but it was very slow in coming down.
Yeah.
And was still over the 110 mark.
Mm-hmm.
This is the person with Hashimoto's, right? And
yeah.
So, you know, I told her what, just to keep monitoring, and the idea was to try and keep it down below 110,
right,
and just to do a few days worth and then get back to me. But I'm not 100% sure what to do.
Well, first of all, it's helping to identify which foods. So if she's eating, you know, she has broccoli for dinner with some salmon, and her blood sugar stays, you know, below 110, that says that was a good meal for her. if she mm-hmm. has a meal and she has rice and it goes up, then the thing, yeah, keep the rice out. So you're going to identify the foods that are pushing it up, and then you're going to make a list of those foods, and she's going to avoid those for 30 days.
Okay, that's good, because that's what I told her.
Good. Yeah.
But, you know, just with it being new, and I'm not, you know, even though I have a nursing background and I know it was always diabetes we were dealing with, it wasn't this kind of more subtle level.
Yeah.
So I'm a little struggling with how to identify when it's too low and too high, but I've got quite a few ideas from what you've said, you know, that the speed at which it takes to come down and what to look for. I'm just wondering if there's anything else that I've missed.
Well, just the how high it goes, how long it takes to come down, and then does it get significantly below where it started after 3 hours?
Right.
Yeah,
okay,
those are the main things. Yeah.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And the thing is, you know what you pointed out, you were dealing with diabetes, right? And that's the problem, though. So many people don't get dealt with until they already have diabetes. We're trying to get them to identify that they're on the path to it, sometimes 10 or 20 years before it would have developed. And imagine how much damage we're saving in their bodies by doing it that way.
Yeah, I love that A1C test. I wish I'd known it was that before. We would have been able to pick up so much stuff, right?
So much. And then the other one is fructosamine, which I was interested because we were talking about it on one call, and Allison was on, and she's in the UK, and she's a medical doctor in the system there. Like, she works in the national system there, and she said, yeah, it's interesting because I mentioned that fructosamine can be good because it can give you the average over a month versus over 3 months. And it might be up and coming as more accurate. She goes, oh, that's interesting, because we dropped it about 10 years ago. We said it was archaic in lieu of the A1C. So it's like we come around full circle. Some of the things that may have been considered not, you know, such sophisticated tests years ago are coming back and to say, well, it'd be nice to see what the average is over a month rather than the average over 3 months, because you can control it better.
And then somebody mentioned that with high-performance athletes, that it should actually be over 6 months you do the A1C, because they keep their red blood cells longer.
Yeah, and the thing about that is that oftentimes you can't tell, because you can't use the numbers that we typically use because they're based on 3 months. So if you use the numbers for average average glucose based on the hemoglobin A1C, that's not going to give you as good a number in somebody who's a high performance athlete.
Mm.
So it's almost like it's useless.
Yeah. Well, it's not useless. It's just that we have to look at it.
You just have to look at it.
That into consideration, right?
Yes, it's a different issue. But it's like it's frustrating sometimes when, like for me, I was like, why is my hemoglobin A1C still 5.5 or something? My blood sugar, I never let it go above 110. How could that possibly be? And then I read this thing about athletes and high performance. I went, oh, maybe that's it. Maybe that's why my hemoglobin A1C hasn't been coming down as low as I think it should come down.
So just a thought here. So for you, maybe you could try dividing that by 4 and then by 5 and then by 6 and see which one coincides with what your readings are, to see what the average length of your blood cells are.
Oh, that's a good idea, yeah. Good idea. Very good. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for the information.
You're welcome. So here's an interesting question from Tony. Do we have access to a glycemic chart for plant-based foods on the site? There's a chart I think I linked to in the. I think there's a paper called The Myth of the Insulin of the glycemic index or something, but if not, that's what I should have called it. But there is a chart, but as far as plant-based, like, they don't have numbers for things like broccoli and celery and things like that, because first of all, the way they do the test is they give somebody a 100-gram dose of a carbohydrate. So imagine how much celery you have to eat to get 100 grams of carbohydrate, right? Two pieces of bread or 15 pounds of celery. So they haven't really done those because they don't really do much until they learn a different way to do the testing. We don't really have it. Yeah, that's a lot of celery. Well, it's for watermelon. That's the interesting thing about the glucose, the glycemic index versus glycemic load. Watermelon has a very high glycemic index, but it has a low glycemic load. And when they calculated, like, yeah, somebody's sitting there eating all this food. Can you imagine being in that test group where you're having to eat all this food, 100-gram doses, and sitting there for 5 hours? And instead of two pieces of bread, they had to eat 3 pounds of watermelon. Well, that's ludicrous. Nobody's going to eat that much in a sitting. So it doesn't give you an idea of the reality. That's what the glucose index, the glycemic index is. So I think that the glycemic index is good as a kind of a baseline, an estimate. You know that certain foods are really high and other foods are low, but you have to also look at, I think the glycemic load is a lot better because that divides it by the weight and the amount, the serving size. Okay, I'm going to go back to the Q&A and see if anybody's added any questions. No. Good. We're good. So I will go over to, so here's what we have to do to go. If you want to see a screen share, and I only have like 5 minutes to do it because I have to catch a plane. So go to join.me/DrRitaMarie. And I just put it in the chat. join.me/DrRitaMarie. And that, when you get there, you'll see, you'll just have to put your name in, and it'll you'll show up, and then I'll get my screen share going. So let me get it started, and let me get the site up while you guys head on over there. Okay, so if I go to, I have it open already. It looks like I don't. Open it up. You will go to. Huh, where'd our members log in? Here we go. Here we go. Okay, so I'm going to go. It's the wrong site, no wonder. Okay, so I'm starting the meeting. It might say waiting for presenter. Okay. All right, so you guys can start coming in. I'm going to make it so that I can unlock it so you guys don't have to put your names in every time. Okay, so I've got six of you are there, so it's join.me/DrRitaMarie, and that'll share my screen, and I'm just going to show you where we're at. So we're starting out on the stress page. The way you get to it, of course, is you go on the side, you go in IRSPT, and you go down to stress. Like with everything else, we have a progress checklist. You can open up the progress checklist. That's going to give you the stuff to do. It just tells you what to do. So as you're going through it, you can check off once you've, you know, watched videos and done all that. That's no different. Learning objectives, and it's very simple. I just want you to be able to explain how cortisol affects blood sugar and how getting stressed affects blood sugar and have tools that you can share with people to help get their stress under control and have them realize that they'll be coming into you and go like, I've been eating this crazy diet and it's not helping. And you're like, okay, calm down. The stress is the issue. And really getting them to know that they have to address all of the areas. So then when we go to core content, which is where most of the stuff is here, stress. There's a video, and it explains, I think the video is about 20 minutes long. Let me see. What does it say? 30 minutes long. So it's a 30-minute video. And it'll take you through the slides, and it'll just really explain a lot of the science behind, you know, why and how and the effects of stress on DHEA and cortisol and that effects on there's some graphs and various things like that. So it's a good thing to watch. Of course, you have your downloadable MP4, MP3. You have the slides full and the slides printer friendly. Then we have this stress assessment. And like I said before, we don't have a PDF of this because we mainly use it online. So if you wanted to create a PDF of these questions, you can just go and copy them like that, do a copy, and then put them in a Word file. You'll have to do some formatting, but at least you'll have the base of the questions there, and you're totally okay to do that. Okay? Then we have some cool things. This is a protocol sheet. And this is exactly how you can go through, step by step by step, what do you do for getting your stress under control in your client. So you start out by reviewing the core content, you assess their stress levels, you explain the relationship, and you've got all these documents that you can use to learn how those things affect. You've got some tools, which I'll show you on the Done For You page, and then you can teach them various things. And you may have your own stress stuff. You may have your own techniques. Maybe you're a big fan of tapping or the work that Byron Katie does or some other things, whatever you do. And then here's a summary of what you teach them. You want to teach them what stress is, how it affects their health and their weight, how goals and visions help to make health-supporting daily choices, the importance of stress transformation breaks and how to do them in 1 to 2 minute intervals, and whatever that is. For me, it's the heart map. I call them mini vacations. For other people, have different kinds of meditations that maybe you do in hours, hour-long intervals, but you can teach them how to do it in 1 to 2 minutes so they can do it throughout the day. Celebrate the positive attributes of themselves, having an emotional eating strategy so they make their choices based on nourishment. Importance of fun, and the power of appreciation. So that's a summary. But you've got resources in this module to show you how to do all this. Then if you come down here, this is an excerpt from a transcript that we had on a presentation I did a while back. So it's like, I don't know how many pages long. What is it? 12 pages. It's actually 11 pages long. It looks like page 12 is blank. But that'll give you a place to take notes. So you can read through it. You can take notes. It's not exactly the same as what's in this thing, but we will be getting you a transcript of the actual. But it's going to give you some good stuff to go on while the transcript is being made. These are some things that I have. I won't go through each one, but they're really cool, just little stress transformation, emotional eating things, various things you can do to help people really get in touch with their inner guidance and who they are and how to respond to life so that it doesn't affect their blood sugar. And then we have two programs that we have. At some point, we will have available so that you can actually send your clients to purchase these, Transforming Stress and the Inspired Health Vision, but we've given them to you as a bonus. You can just do them on your own and you can have fun with them. And I highly encourage you to do it and get in touch with your values and visions. It's super important. And then the Transforming Stress is a bunch of little mini kind of heart math kind of things and explains the whole system and how you can teach it to your clients. It also comes with little transcripts. So that's really cool. So it's not just the videos. It's a whole page, lots of good information about the system and how to do the heart math. I highly encourage you to watch, listen, read PDFs. That's an example of me taking through people through it, an example of another technique called heart lock-in. And then you sign up for these daily messages if you want to get them in your inbox. But if you don't want to get them in your inbox, you can just click on day one, and that'll give you not only the audio recording, but it gives you a little transcript of it. So that's kind of cool. So you can read it, too, so if you're good. So you can pull these all together into one system. Okay, so that's that. Let's go back here. And then what you've got on the Done For You resources page is you've got things that you can use and you can actually give your clients. So the way we, what we ask you to do for this is, oops, I hit the voice message. Probably most people don't even know that that's there. So if you want to distribute it as is, you can just distribute them as is, no problem. They have my copyright on it. If you want to also give yourself some, you know, when you give it to somebody so they know where it came from, you can just use it as is, but go in and edit the Word doc and just change and say distributed by with permission, and then you have my copyright and my website. You can put your own name, your own website, however you want to do it. If you like it, but there's certain things you want to change, you want to customize it, you can do that. You just have to put adapted by your name, your website, etc., with permission and copyright, and you have my copyright. And that's all. And you can use all of these. So, you know, some of these you might find useful. Some of them you might not find useful. Maybe you have your own tools. But whatever you do, it's really important to manage the stress in people. And a lot of the ones that are the busiest are the ones that are ignoring it. And they're saying, I'm eating all right, and I don't know what's wrong, and it must be something else. And no, it's the stress. And then your action steps for what to do with this material. Choose a guinea pig and practice. Practice explaining how the stress is working, like Tony's doing with her husband. And then create a handout of your own to give them based on some of what's shared, right? Maybe a little cheat sheet of these are the things you want them to do. Evaluate your own stress habits because, you know, we really need to take care of ourselves first, right? Physician, heal thyself was a thing. I think it was a Hippocrates statement. Evaluate your own stress levels. Do the assessments. Test your blood sugar. I know most of you are. We've had great discussions about that today. And then counsel the clients and family members to track their blood sugar. And you've got tools that you can use. And you can use the spreadsheet, a copy of it, a PDF of that spreadsheet that I put together for tracking blood sugar. Or your own, however. And some people just like to do their own. They like to just track it in notebooks. So that's it. And then the next module that we'll be doing is fitness. Like I said, it's all ready. So, you know, I have a lot of stuff on Stacy's plate with all these programs going on. So she should get to it probably sometime next week. And then we'll just, you know, once a week, we'll put them out for you. So this, I think we have one more call next week. Let me look at our calendar to see. You can see how busy my calendar is. That's December. Okay, so next week we have one on the 17th. So we do have one more before the holidays. And then we have a break. We're going to start the Before Be Gone calls in January. I think it's the 7th. And we have no insulin resistance calls scheduled yet, but we will add because I want to make sure that we have time to go over all the other modules as we release them. You'll have plenty of access during the Before Be Gone because there's once a week. There's a call. But I also want to have I'd like to add a couple of the IRSPT calls just to make sure that you don't want to be taking a lot of the questions to the regular people Before Be Gone calls, like about, oh, how do I coach my client about this? I prefer that we have your own calls where you could do that. So we'll just look at the schedule and see where we can fit in some other calls. Those of you who are in NEPT, Nutritional Endocrinology Practitioner Training, you have a lot of other calls, and you can ask me on those. Those of you who are just in IRSPT, we'll put a couple of calls in January to make sure. And also, we are going to be opening up registration for NEPT again. So if you would like to find out more about that and what it would take to be part of that, you can just go out there right now and go to neptapply.com, and there's an application. You can fill out the application and have a talk with one of us and see if it's something that you want to move into. And you'll get a full 100% credit for whatever you paid towards IRSPT. You'll get 100% credit towards the NEPT, which is two levels of program, a two-year and a one-year. And it's just an amazing group of people, and it's just a life-changing content. So that's it. Let me pause my screen share, and you guys can come back if you have any. No, I got to go. I have a plane to catch. So we've had an hour and a half, so that's been good. Thank you guys for being here, and make sure that you keep asking questions on the Facebook group. Lynn is really good about that. And all of you are really great at doing it, because it's not just the insulin resistance program, but it's all the people in NEPT that you get to go with. Carol is asking about canker sores. Post that to the Facebook group, because I'm sure someone or Lynn will have an answer to that. Oh, wow, there's a whole bunch of people that just, something's not related. Any things that are not directly related, like the colonoscopy question and the canker sores question, and the gallbladder, whoa, might be good to post or to just take them to the next call. Or post them on the Facebook group. If you get an answer, if I get a chance on my breaks over the weekend, I can answer them there. Okay? Super. Thank you so much, everybody. Bye-bye.